everyone. I'm Viviana Young, the Environmental Education and Outreach Leader for Umpqua Watersheds through United Communities AmeriCorps, and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Molalla, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment, which Indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement.
With me today, I have Janice Reed and Jerry Myers. Would you two mind introducing yourselves and telling us what you do?
Yeah, hi, I'm Janice Reed, and I was a wildlife biologist for 35 years before retiring a few years ago. I studied spotted owls. And the first time I met Jerry was in 1985 when I showed up for a wildlife job at the Bureau of Land Management here in Roseburg, Oregon.
And you, Jerry?
Okay, yeah, I'm Jerry Myers. I'm a retired BLM wildlife biologist. I started in the Eugene District back in 1974. And that's about the time the spotted owl stuff started up. In 75, I was doing spotted owl surveys in the Eugene District. And when I came down here in 76, I was doing pretty much extensive spotted owl surveys across the Roseburg District. Over the years, I've gotten into quite a few different aspects of wildlife, whether it's herpetology, ornithology, been associated with a lot of the people that are doing research out of Oregon State and other places. I've supported quite a few of the folks that have come through here over the years as far as getting them some direction, that sort of thing. Did some consulting work with film crews that came through. We've just been kind of a hodgepodge and a really cross-section of wildlife, whether it's being out doing field work or trying to help folks out when they were doing research projects, that sort of thing.
Cool. So where did you grow up? And did you do a lot of hiking or camping growing up? Or did you engage with the environment a lot in your earlier days?
Well, I grew up over in Sutherland and went to school all through grade school and high school in Sutherland. I did a lot of hunting and fishing in the valley over there. People would see me going down the road with a big old shotgun and I'd be out hunting, or we'd be over fishing. So I was covering quite a bit of ground. The camping, yeah, got out quite a bit. It was in Boy Scout troop over there. We did quite a few hikes and at least overnight trips around this area. So I was pretty well familiar with this region by the time I was out of high school and headed for OSU.
So how did you become interested in wildlife?
Well, that's kind of a takeoff from growing up hunting and fishing and getting interested in the critters that are out there. So it was everything from salamanders and snakes to owls, eagles, whatever. Just wanted to know more about them. And so I got set to go to Oregon State University in wildlife management at that time.
So you mentioned that you got involved with ornithology and herpetology and others. What's your favorite type of animal?
I like them all. Everything from rattlesnakes, everybody thinks you have to be afraid of those, but if you start understanding them and where they're at, well, that's fine. I worked with some of the bat researchers, so we spent a lot of nights out taking bats out of mist nets. Just about every aspect we had around here, I've had some experience in small mammals. The spotted owl resource thing got me out quite a bit, and I didn't just look for spotted owls. When I was out there, I was also taking in other critters that were out there in different habitats. So got a pretty good background in a cross-section of wildlife ecology.
So yeah, I'm very interested to learn that we do have something in common, actually. I am also an OSU graduate. I got my degree in biology. What course of study did you take at OSU, and what were the classes that you enjoyed there?
Well, I got pretty good cross-section. I started in 64 and was in wildlife management at that time. We started with basic stuff, the chemistry, the biology, basic biology, that sort of thing. But some of the other courses were, number one, ornithology, herpetology. We got into small mammals quite a bit. It was, again, it was kind of a cross-section. Got into some communication classes, that sort of thing. And I think probably the classes I enjoyed the most were the ones where we had pretty good personal interaction with the professors. And a lot of that was with Doc Storm over in biology or zoology, and that was the ornithology and the herpetology and things. That was a real beginning on getting a broad perspective on essentially the class of, I would say, it gave me a good background and had a lot of contacts with folks. And so I carried that off into my career as far as interacting with these folks that I had met or was mentored at OSU.
I understand from other sources that your education was interrupted by some military activity. Did you engage with the military?
Yeah, I kind of ran out of money, and that was back when things were a lot simpler. You paid for what you got, and then there weren't a lot of the loans, so you never got into debt much. And I was working in the mills during the summers, and then I'd take a couple, three quarters at Oregon State. And I took one quarter at UCC while I was still working in the mill. And 66, I got back to Oregon State. And that was my last quarter up there. I joined the Navy in August, and I shipped out December of 66. And that was a four-year stint. And then it took me about a year and a half out of there working in the mills before I got back up to Oregon State. So it took me 11 years to get a degree, but I got it. And the Navy experience was invaluable. I spent a lot of time in Southern California. Again, the interest in wildlife, we were back up. A couple of friends and I would be out in the desert looking for critters, and we'd be on the coast. So I got exposed to quite a bit there. The jungles in the Philippines, I got to spend some time there with some of the locals and learned quite a bit about the wildlife they had. So I had a pretty good cross-section. And also, just about everywhere I went, I was doing a lot of snorkeling, a lot of diving. So I got a perspective on the oceanography into things, or at least the ocean biology. So it was a good experience. And then I was a weapons, electronic weapons type, working in aviation while I was in the Navy, Point Magoo, California. And that was a wintering grounds for a lot of the waterfowl. So got exposed to quite a bit down there. And that was the site of my naval duties. We'd be out checking out the local flora and fauna. And so that brought that back into, when I came back to Oregon State, there were a lot of questions I had, and I was looking for answers. So I was working at my curriculum and trying to get answers from what I'd seen, say, overseas or, say, Southern California, that sort of thing.
So during your college and military career, did you get involved with anything like clubs or volunteer activity or anything like that?
No, pretty well restricted to the Navy. didn't have a lot of time for, say, work outside of base or what the Navy was doing. I was on special projects quite a bit. And so it was like being told, grab a bag, you're going to be gone for a week. And I'd be out at some other naval aviation area installing stuff, some aircraft. So not much time for volunteering.
But you did eventually become a wildlife biologist. Can you tell me a little bit about that and maybe what your favorite thing about being a wildlife biologist was?
Well, after I got out of the Navy, I worked for a year and a half in the mills to get a grub stake. And when I got back to Oregon State, I was also under the GI Bill. So that saved me quite a bit. And it enabled me to go through to my degree. And at that time, that five-year lag in between, the emphasis went from wildlife management to wildlife science. And so we were heavy on the research end of things when I got back to school. I took a degree in, 1975. I was getting ready to take a break and a vacation, and I got a call from BLM in Eugene. I'd worked for them the summer before, and they wanted me to start the spotted owl inventories up there. And by that time, I'd met Eric Forsman, at least saw what an owl looked like. And so that was the start of a good portion of my career.
And what was your field work like? What was going out there and doing these spotted owl surveys or other sorts of activities like that?
Well, it was interesting. A lot of night work. So you saw a lot of stuff that wasn't available during the day. Doing surveys. Sometimes I was back out in the old growth timber at night, and it's a little bit alive when the sun goes down and it starts turning dark. Owls, small mammals, that sort of thing are out and active. So a lot of times you could just sit down and kind of see what was going on there for 10 minutes or so. Also got very familiar with the areas, at least in the Roseburg district. And so when I got asked by certain individuals, whether they're photographers or filmmakers, about where they could go to get certain photographs, whether it was a pileated woodpecker nest. We had people out in spotted owls. We had a writer from Time magazine that was down and spent some time with us, a writer and a photographer. So it was kind of a hodgepodge, but it all kind of revolved around being able to show people what was out there and kind of modeling stuff that they were interested in. So I had a lot of contacts with folks, everything from Partridge Films Limited from the UK to biologists from Australia that spent some time here with us, mycologists. So I got into mycology quite a bit. I was into botany. So we had a lot of things going on back in the 70s. It was the aspects. Well, like if you looked at plants, the state of Oregon had something like 360 plants on a special species list that we had to inventory. And things just went on. It was not only wildlife, but it was also just about every aspect out there.
So you've had a lot of different experience with many different sorts of activities. You've had a lot of variety in your career. And I understand that you've been a great mentor to a lot of people and shared your experience with others. One being Janice, who's with us here today. Would you like to discuss your influence on Janice? And Janice, would you like to maybe talk a little bit about how he's mentored you and how he's changed your perspectives and given you experience?
Sure. My memories of Jerry, when I first showed up in Roseburg, he was the first one that met me at the front desk on my very first day And I think Jerry really enjoyed taking young biologists under his wing and showing them sort of the wonders of nature. I always considered Jerry not just a wildlife biologist, but more of a naturalist. He had a wide interest in a variety of things, from fungi all the way up to birds and mammals. He could talk to you about almost anything related to nature and express the wonderment of it as well. He also sort of liked to shock you a little bit. I can remember him taking me up onto the BLM roads overlooking the Weyerhaeuser plantation, and you're going through these large old trees, this beautiful, pristine forest, and then you break out into this large expanse of just cut over land. And coming from California, where the rules were different for private landowners, that was a big impact on me. And I think Jerry got a real good kick out of that, of showing me the difference out there and just having him see my reaction. You know, he had a lot of years out into the world compared to me. At the time, I was 25 and he was about 40. So he had several years of just being accustomed to being out in the woods, as well as being somebody who grew up in the area and experienced that from a very young age. And I grew up in the city, in an urban area. So he really got a lot of joy out of taking me and other young biologists out and just having them experience a lot of the natural world.
And Jerry, do you have any comments about your experience with mentoring Janice?
Well, I had what I called the flophouse for indigent biologists and other people. I always had an extra room for folks while they're getting on their feet down here. We just, like I said, we had a good cross-section of folks coming through, whether they're biologists, whether they're just starting out, whether they're folks that are doing research down here, doing surveys of wildlife. And I know one day I came home and my kitchen had been turned into a prep lab with a herpetologist. They'd been doing a lot of collecting and they're putting stuff up for the Smithsonian. He was with us for, I don't know, a couple of weeks while the crew was doing field work. People from the cameraman from Canada would come down every other week and spend a couple of weeks filming down here. In between people that were coming through, they had a place to crash, at least for a while. And that was always enjoyable. And a lot of people that are passing through got a lot of perspective on their expertise as far as sitting down, having a beer, and talking about what they were doing and what I was doing. So it was a good interaction for most of the time, most of the folks that I'd met.
So you've helped people who have even done different jobs than your own and had different career paths than your own. For example, how did your job working as a BLM wildlife biologist differ from, say, Janice's job as a wildlife biologist for the Pacific Northwest Research Station or the Forest Service?
Well, Janice was focused on one thing, and that was the spotted owl. She came down here working for a guy by the name of Gary Miller, and he's the one that we got started in 1983. I was contacted from the Wildlife Department at Oregon State, and they were looking for a young spotted owl so Gary could do his master's on the dispersal. And so we started from there, and then things just kind of bloomed. And Janice was pretty specific and pretty well locked in on the owl work, and I was out doing timber sale reviews, interacting with other folks, trying to get information out. So it was kind of an interesting times.
Let me just add to that. The difference that I see in what I was doing, I was in the research branch of wildlife biology and Jerry was in management. Jerry spent a lot of time writing reports so that their projects on BLM would comply with the law, filing environmental impact statements and abiding by NEPA, interacting with a lot of specialists in the agency themselves so that the project would meet a lot of the legal specifications and also the projects would be able to generate some income from. So Jerry is right. You know, I was very focused on research. I had one job and that was to work on the spotted owl. Jerry had multiple jobs of monitoring and also writing legal and biological opinions.
So, a question for both of you. Out of all the types of projects that you guys have worked on, which is your favorite, would you say, overall? Jerry, you can answer first if you'd like.
Okay, well, I don't know whether I had a favorite or not, but the spotted owl work got me out and about. So that gave me an opportunity to get involved in a lot of other aspects of wildlife. As I mentioned before, being out and say a lot of nighttime work, that sort of thing. So it's a lot different out there at night. And I think that's the best project, I think, and most of the long-term project that I was working on. Did some fisheries work. Some of that turned out to be fairly fruitful. So it's hard to at least select one project and say that was a favorite. I had 25 years out there on a broad spectrum of things.
What about you, Janice?
Well, my favorite aspect of working on spotted owls, and of course, my entire career was spent doing various aspects of spotted owl work. I also worked with species that were associated with spotted owls, such as red tree voles and flying squirrels and wood rats. But, you know, I really enjoyed the daytime hiking and finding the owls. I'm a person who likes a good puzzle. I still like to do jigsaw puzzles, and I think some of the most fun times that I have was when I was doing radio telemetry on dispersing juveniles. And I would spend a lot of time trying to track down where these owls were in Western Oregon as they were moving across the landscape. And I think also I like to travel. So I got to see some really remote parts of Oregon, Western Oregon, that I would have never have gotten to see if I wasn't doing that job. So I think I look back on that as a really valuable and fun time. It was mostly day work, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the day work because I liked seeing things. But yeah, the whole idea of being able to solve the puzzle of where is this animal based upon just hearing a few blips on the radio and tracking it down was really a very, very fun aspect.
Well, it's interesting to hear both of your different perspectives on that. Now, we're sort of the inverse of that question. What has been the most challenging or frustrating aspect of each of your careers? Once again, Jerry, would you like to go first?
I think that was dealing with a lot of people that are pretty closed-minded and focused and not interested in, say, the perspectives that were out there as far as management requirements, that sort of thing. It was difficult to convince them that I wasn't playing games if we were supposed to comment on something, and especially on the owl work, trying to keep the agency out of trouble. And a lot of times things got blocked. It was difficult working with a lot of people that didn't understand the habitat, the forest resources out here. In fact, I talked to one guy and I asked him what he saw in a tree out there. And he was looking at anything above the stump. And so that was their perspective. If it wasn't on a logging truck headed for the mill, well, it was wasted, and if somebody was trying to interfere with that, well, you're essentially disregarded. We had good relationships with a lot of the managers, and they'd listen and understand what where you're coming from. And if we could show them the background information that we had that supported our recommendations, well, then they would go along with it pretty well. So it's like in any agency, you throw a lot of people in with different experiences and you expect one product to come out and you want consensus on that. Well, it was really difficult to get just because you had so many different viewpoints and different aspects of what was out there.
And before we move to Janice for her idea, I have a bit of a follow-up question. Do you have any advice for environmentalists or biologists who may have to work with these people who do have vastly different perspectives? Do you have any advice on how to keep the conversation from getting defensive, for example?
Yeah, that's a hard thing to get into because, like I said, everybody's got their own biases and different perspectives. And common ground is something that not too many people are willing to, say, sacrifice part of their viewpoint or their biases in order to come together. So that's a difficulty that has to be understood. And sometimes it's really difficult to work with folks like that. From an environmental aspect, you know, we're in a timber country and there's one viewpoint out there and it's pretty well locked in. Although there are individuals that are interested and kind of want to help out, but it's difficult to know what it is now. I've been retired for 20 years, so I've been away from the agency for quite a bit. I know it's changed quite a bit. It's gotten from resource management to career management. And so people are really interested in, I don't think people are really interested in taking a look at some of the resource problems that we have because it might interfere with their trajectory on their career. That's my perspective anyway. So that's got me in trouble more than once.
Well, you did at least mention at one point finding common ground. And even though that can be difficult and some people can be somewhat uncooperative, I do agree with you that that is an important thing to try to find to really get deep into a conversation like that. And so now let's move on to Janice. So Janice, what was the most challenging or difficult thing that you've had to conquer in your career?
Well, I think I just go ahead and echo some of Jerry's comments about the challenges when you're working with the species that has a lot of controversy around it and people, they feel threatened because of their livelihood. But I think, you know, in addition to that, I had difficulty at the very beginning with being one of the few females that was working in a fairly male-dominated career. It did get better through time, but those first few years were very difficult in terms of being taken seriously and just really feeling comfortable in that profession. So today it's a lot different. There are a lot of females who are in wildlife biology, and I'm maybe even dominated by females. I sometimes see more females, at least at the BLM, than I used to when I first started. So personally, that was one of my challenges, but also what Jerry said, just, you know, facing people who didn't really want to keep an open mind about some of the issues out there.
And now for some brief announcements. Thrive Umpqua and United Communities AmeriCorps invite you to the St. Patrick's Pedal and Pet event. Bike or walk with us on March 12th at 10 a.m. Bring your gear to the half shell and wear green. This family-friendly event encourages natural movement and a greener, healthier mode of transport. We hope that by sharing this ride together, we can make underutilized routes become more active as the weather warms. It's fun for everyone, with a raffle opportunity after the route is completed. Visit Thrive Umpqua's Facebook event page to sign up and for more information. If you love to read and would like to discuss environmental topics with fellow bookworms, try Turning Over a New Leaf Book Club. Turning Over a New Leaf Book Club meets over Zoom every other month and will next meet on Saturday, March 26th. The book to be discussed will be Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret by Catherine Coleman Flowers. All sessions take place virtually at 5 p.m. on their date. For more information, please email Umpqua Watershed's Director of Education and Outreach, Ryan Kincaid. Her email is ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Or, if you'd like to share your environmental knowledge with the community by being interviewed for an episode of Living Downstream, email me at viviana@umpquawatersheds.org. That's viviana@umpquawatersheds.org.
You mentioned that as a female, you've had some issues in the past, but that's gotten better. There are other diverse groups, though, who might be facing the same sort of discrimination or prejudice in the work environment, especially in the field of biology. Do you have any advice for minority groups or anyone else who may be possibly facing a bit of a prejudice problem in their environment?
Well, I would just say be confident, stick with it, follow your dreams. You belong there just as much as anyone.
And speaking of diversity, you've both met a lot of people in your career from various backgrounds and even various countries. Can you tell me about some of the interesting people that you've met in your careers, Jerry?
Oh, yeah, there's quite a few. I think the last project we had was a gentleman that had done his PhD in Australia, and he was a zoologist, but he was interested in mycology, and there weren't very many mycologists. I think there's only one mycologist in southern Australia, and she had gone through mycology up at Oregon State Forest Sciences Lab with Dr. Jim Trappi. Dr. Andrew Clurge was the person who was over here, and he was looking at mycophagy on some of the animals that we had, because he'd found that a lot of the marsupials in Australia were relying on fungi, and very little was known about them. So he was over here for 6 months. I was working with him on acquiring animals that feed on truffles, especially like redback bulls, flying squirrels, and a couple of other species. And I got him out and got him acquainted with that stuff. The filmmakers that were down here were an interesting group. They were from all over the world. The one gal had been filming in Northern Africa on bat-eared foxes, and then she's out here filming spotted owls. Just a broad perspective. It's hard to figure out pick a favorite, I guess, but they all had something to offer, and I had something to offer them. So that was part of my enjoyment in the career, was the interactions with other people that had similar interests, but a lot different perspectives on their part of the world. But we got to trade quite a bit on that. Say information or perspective exchange from one country to the next. So it was just, like I said, it was interesting. We had a few characters that came through. One was a filmer for David Suzuki's Nature of Things in Canada. He was down filming, and he'd get ready to go out of the house in the morning, and he'd put his lunch up, peanut butter and garlic sandwiches. I guess that kept the mosquitoes away or something. But interesting individuals.
And how did you learn about and meet the people here at Umpqua Watersheds?
Well, Janice was one of the early folks here. I don't really remember when I met folks and found out kind of what was going on. May have been a tour. I used to take school groups out on spotted owls. Might have been people from Umpqua Watersheds. Things just kind of run together over the years. Different folks, different agencies, different organizations. So it's hard to go from there anyway.
I think that between Ken Carlone and Jim Capella, I think that's some of the earliest people that Jerry interacted with. Jim Capella used to volunteer for BLM, and so the association with Umpqua Watersheds was probably through him initially.
Janice, what kind of people have you met? Have you met any interesting characters or interesting people during your career?
Well, I don't want to get into trouble here, but Jerry's got to be one of the more interesting characters out there.
Thanks, Janice.
Well, other than Jerry, I have a number of people in my career that I respect immensely. A couple of the real interesting ones that I've met from other countries include Nigel Marvin. Nigel was born in England. He was filming from California all the way up to the Canadian border. He was filming along the coast following the whales, and he would stop and come inland and film different things along the way. And he came and filmed about the spotted owls. But he put together this whole video and we took him out, showed him an owl, got him some great footage, but he was definitely a character. And I enjoyed working with his team. He dived, you see these wildlife shows on TV where some of the hosts just kind of stand back and let one of the helpers do the dirty work. But Nigel was right in there. He jumped on that red tree vole when it came out of the tree, and he had no trouble handling it. So that was interesting. And then the other person I have to mention, or couple really, is Prachi Mehta and Jayant Kulkarni from India, who came to see how we operated our demography project here and then took what they learned and applied it to their own project in India. And we had developed such a friendship that they invited me to visit them in India, and going there and just seeing the conditions that they work through. All of their projects are privately funded. They have to get grants for everything. There's really no government funding. Their study sites were like a day trip away, and multiple types of transportation, from train to car and bus. And so just the immense respect that I have for their dedication to do that kind of field work. I'm just so proud to know them. And they are getting an award this year from the Owl Festival at the end of April here. They're getting an award for their work that they've done in contributing to the preservation of the forest owlet, which is a critically endangered species of central India.
It does sound like you've met a lot of interesting people. One of those first people that you brought up was Nigel Marvin. Am I correct in saying that he was actually the original host of Shark Week? Is that right?
That's right, Shark Week.
So I'd like to actually take this opportunity to mention a few people who have influenced me, some interesting people that I've met. So Ken Carlone works here at Umpqua Watersheds. He was one of my professors at UCC. So he was actually my biology professor, and he was in one of my first courses that I took at UCC. So one of my first college courses was his biology class. And he's responsible for the one and only time that I've ever been out of the country. I went down with him and a group of other people to Mexico where we studied botany mostly, but also various wildlife. I actually got to touch a whale during that trip. So that's an experience of a lifetime. So I would like to thank him for his influence in my life so far and how he's helped me along in this environmental journey. So thank you to Ken Carlone. And the person who really got me introduced to environmental volunteerism and reached out to me to help with restoration projects was a lady named Cindy Hawes. She is a professor at UCC, and she also is the founder of Umpqua Natural Leadership Science Hub, also known as UNLEASH. I helped her with a few summer camps and other restoration projects, especially associated with salamanders and frogs and herps in general. So she's actually the one who introduced me to Rochelle from AmeriCorps. So that's how I got involved with all of you guys and with this whole situation. So shout out to Rochelle as well. And speaking of AmeriCorps, Jerry, you're actually a big helper and supporter of AmeriCorps, and you're actually one of the funders for the AmeriCorps project, especially this one with Umpqua Watersheds. How did you get involved with AmeriCorps?
Well, I saw some of the stuff that folks have been doing. We had a couple gals here a few years ago that were actively working with some of the schools. And so I was kind of interested. I gave them a little bit of support with a few materials, that sort of thing. But the educational aspects of it are what I was interested in. And Janice had mentioned that they were looking for grants, and then I had an opportunity, and I was very fortunate in my life to be able to afford to underwrite a few things. So gave that a try this year. Some of the other things I've done was Phoenix School and then Wildlife Department up at Oregon State. So that kind of is revolving around education and getting people in there that are really interested in reaching out. And so that was an opportunity for me to make a difference, I think.
Well, thank you so much for everything you do for our community, both directly and through helping other groups who are helpers of the community, such as AmeriCorps. So moving on, in the course of your work, did you do a lot of writing? And if you did, how did you learn how to write for scientific and agency publications?
I stayed away from the scientific and agency publications pretty much. The writing revolved around wildlife evaluations on, say, timber sales or different actions, management actions, stuff that agency was taking. The scientific aspects of it, I supported a few folks, but that wasn't involvement, although they put my name on things every once in a while. Agency publications, we really didn't have any, although on some of the publications that came across my desk, I was asked to edit and make comments on them. But that was usually from a group from a college that was putting together management plans or a book, that sort of thing. They wanted some input on certain aspects. So I've done a lot of that, the editing. I had a background in technical writing, so I did most of the stuff in the shop I worked with in the Navy, as far as installation aspects on some of the equipment we had. So the writing varied, but most of it had to be fairly accurate. And environmental impact statements, that sort of thing. But I pretty much stayed away from getting tied too much to a desk, although that kind of evolved into that type of a situation.
So, Janice, what about you? Have you had any experience with scientific writing or agency publications?
Yeah, that's where Jerry and I differed a lot. I stayed away from agency publications, and My focus was on scientific publications when I was involved. Most of my work was field work, but I did get to help with writing and put out some technical papers as well for some of our field techniques. Most of the time, and how I learned to write was just reading other people's publications, reading them and, you know, picking up on the sentence structure and the formatting and conciseness of the scientific technique in writing.
And did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't think that I wanted to do that as the main part of my job, but I certainly enjoyed being able to put things down in writing. And, you know, and currently I still do a little bit of writing. Even in retirement, I can put together a pretty good, concise paper or a story of things that are going on in the Umpqua Valley. And so I do contribute to the Umpqua Watersheds newsletter, as well as do some reports from our field outings and such.
Amazing. So circling back a little bit, I would like to hear a little bit more about your time in Australia, if that's all right, Jerry. Do you have any more to talk about your experience in Australia? Any key memories or anything like that?
Oh yeah. I went down, it was kind of a busman's holiday because we were out in the field and we were doing mycological surveys, truffle surveys, and that was with Dr. Trappi out of Oregon State, a couple other Americans, the Finnish guy that was along. We were put up in various lodgings, I'll put it that way, everything from church camp barracks to the cabin out in the woods that had frogs in the water supply, that sort of thing. Well, it's kind of interesting, though. We were doing work in one area, and it was some of the old growth eucalypts. And I found evidence of one of their owls. It was a powerful owl. And so the next day, when we got out of that area where we had our plots, we went into a forestry office in one of the nearby towns. And I was sitting in the lobby while Dr. Claridge was talking to some folks. And a guy walks by and he says, "Jerry, what are you doing here, Mike?" And it was a guy that I put up at the house that had come in from Australia a couple of years before and stayed at the house for a couple of nights. And so it was one of the small world moments down there. The country was interesting. And they don't have ticks, but they've got leeches while you're crawling around the bushes. That was kind of an experience. But it was a deep perspective. We were in Snowy River country, and the headwaters is Kosciuszko National Park. And my idea of Australia wasn't redneck wallabies bouncing around through a foot and a half of snow. And so they do have their high country. It's a lot like Oregon there, because they've got the Great Dividing Range, which is like our Cascades, and it gets weathered in, that sort of thing. So it was interesting work, and it was an interesting area. You know, I always wanted to go back, but I'm kind of aged out of that now. But like I said, it was a busman's holiday. And most of the places that we were working on have burned up in the last few years. So I don't know what's left back there.
Yeah. So Jerry hasn't mentioned that he has done a lot of photography over the years, and he's very good at it. But he has also had a few professional photographers come during the time that he was working on spotted owls, and they have taken some really wonderful pictures. And they also, because of his willingness to take them out and show him spotted owls, they actually framed and gave him some really spectacular pictures of spotted owls. one of which Jerry has given to me and is hanging in my dining room as my 50th birthday gift that Jerry gave to me. He snuck into my house and hung it on the wall, and it only took me a couple of hours to notice that it was hanging there. But he has had a few great photographers coming through.
That was the big one, right?
Of a northern spotted owl.
Yeah, and Jerry called it Socks. Remember, it's the East Fork Rock Creek male.
Yeah, that's what we called Socks. But that was a Tom Mangelson photograph, who was a well-known photographer, actually an internationally known wildlife photographer and environmentalist. And he had a rough time trying to get near a spotted owl in Northern California. And he got my name, so he gave us a call, and we told him to come on. And Frank Oliver and I took him out and introduced him to some of the owls. And the one on Janice's wall was in an area that was fairly steep. And Mangelson had his problems with steep ground down in California. But we were standing about 4 or 5 feet apart. And I called the owl, and it was one that I worked with quite a bit. Anyway, Tom, he's a wildlife photographer that's filmed polar bears, grizzly bears, all kinds of stuff up close. And we were about, still, I don't know, 5, 6 feet apart. And as a joke, I just clapped my hands and said, come, 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 come. And the bird dropped down out of the trees, flew right between us and stuck himself on the tree that he photographed. So we gave him a lot of opportunities for photographs. And like I said, he was just one of the photographers that was out here. Another one was terrible on names anymore.
Give me a hint, maybe I can help you.
Washington Park Zoo. And he and his wife had filmed Gorillas in the Mist, and they gave me a copy of their book. So.
I don't know that one, I guess.
No, he was written up as one of the outstanding photographers in the Northwest at one time. But like I said, that was 35, 40 years ago, so. The memory dims after a while.
Now, Tom Mangelson has had his photography up at the Portland airport. He was one of the people that had his pictures displayed there. I don't know if you've ever caught him. They might still be there. I don't know. Yeah, I've had Paul Bannock come and go out in the field with me. Paul's a notable photographer. He focuses a lot on just owls, but also other avian species, but yeah, mostly birds.
So thank both of you so much for appearing on the show today. And I look forward to talking to you, Jerry, soon for our next interview about your plans and your role in habitat conservation. So I look forward to that. And thank you, Janice, as well. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you very much, Viviana.
Yep, thanks. It's been interesting. It's been a new experience for me.